Welcome to the Jonah Gary Show, friends. Glad you could join us this Friday, every Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports app, and all OTT devices. We appreciate you coming along. Let's take a look at the top stories in the world of baseball, and we will start with a big one. It is Starling Marte suspended 80 games for violating the league's joint drug policy. This is a big one, of course. Any major suspension like this is going to cause a ripple effect within the game of baseball. Marte, one of the best young outfielders in the game, a key part of the Pittsburgh Pirates. So let's get into some of the details of this story. First of all, he was ultimately suspended for testing positive for a drug called nandrolone. What is nandrolone, you might ask? It's a drug that can promote muscle growth, bone density, and other positive effects to people's physical, to their bodies. Now, the issue here is, what is nandrolone and where does it exist? So an interesting story by a guy named Aaron Gordon for Vice Sports. He interviewed Victor Conti, who was, of course, the architect of the Balco Lab. And what Conti said was that nandrolone only appears in very rare circumstances, and it basically only occurs with illicit laboratories. In other words, no player would take this because it appears in ultra trace levels and is very easy to detect. Nobody would willingly put this in their system. And so this brings us to the larger point, which is, you've got these illicit labs, you've got no quality control, players ultimately don't know what's going into their systems. Now, this has been going on for a while. PED use is never gonna leave us. Players are always gonna look for an edge. They're always going to try to do something or other. Not all players, but some players are going to. And you think about what else is going on in baseball, where you've got laser surgery, the most advanced techniques that can make players better, blood spinning, stem cell therapy. You've got all kinds of methods. Toradol, which is a terrible painkiller, much more dangerous than many performance-enhancing drugs, can be put in your body to prevent pain. All of these things are going on. There's this ambiguous level of, well, what's good and what's not good and so forth. Here's my proposal. Legalize everything. I mean in America and I mean in baseball. You're looking at a situation where players are jeopardizing their health. They don't know what's going on. Things can get very shady and difficult. Ultimately, players are going to try to find a way to get an edge. Put everything out there, leave it to the open market to try to figure things out, and you'll get safer substances so that players can make intelligent decisions under proper medical supervision and figure out what it is that they want to do. If they want to try to take beta blockers to help their nerves, fine. If they want to try to promote muscle growth and the ability to work out more, fine. Open it up to everything. This is obviously a radical idea. This is not going to happen tomorrow in the world of baseball or in America, but that is my proposal. You can read more about it in this week's Carry the 10 column at CBS Sports. I hope you do. There's some nuance involved. It's a difficult argument, but I think it's one that we need to discuss and get serious about it and get real about it. All right, let's go to our second topic this week, and that is closers. Ooh, it's been tough so far for closers and bullpens in general so far in Major League Baseball. You take a look at what's going on in the world of baseball, and we've seen blown saves just go up dramatically over the first 2.5 weeks of the season. Now, blown saves can occur in all kinds of different ways. You could blow a save in the sixth inning. That's possible. It could be your setup man, what have you. But in this case, we're seeing particularly a lot of closers blow saves, and a lot of closer situations end up in flux. Texas Rangers may be the most pressing example of this. Sam Dyson, what a nightmarish first week of the season it was for him. Absolutely got torched on 3 separate occasions, so much so that they put him on the disabled list with some sort of phantom injury because they didn't want him in their bullpen anymore. They still don't know who their closer is going to be with Dyson out. That's one situation. You've got the Philadelphia Phillies. Jean Mar Gomez is their closer at the beginning of the season. Well, lo and behold, he gets torched and they change closers. They go to Joaquin Benoit, except that Hector Neris got the save last night for the Phillies, and that remains up in the air. We're seeing more and more teams struggle with all kinds of situations. Washington Nationals are another one. They start the year, looks like David Robertson, they might trade for him. That doesn't happen. Sean Kelly might be their closer. That doesn't happen. Blake Treinen is their closer. That lasts about 10 minutes. Now they're going with Glover, Coda Glover, as well as Sean Kelly. It's a mess. It's a mess in a bunch of different bullpens. It's an unusual kind of situation. Not necessarily something that's going to persist all season long, but it calls into question the bigger issue of, you've got these Andrew Miller types in the world of baseball. There are a couple guys who could pitch that well. Hopefully teams will start to realize more and more that you put your best pitchers in the most optimal situations, in the tightest situations. Could be the ninth inning, could be the sixth, seventh, or eighth, but ultimately just try to squeeze the most value that you can out of the guys that you have. All right, let us go to one of our favorite segments on the Jonah Carey Show, and that is Jonah's One Word Take. And we will start with Wei-Yin Chen and the Miami Marlins. Wei-Yin Chen throws 7 no-hit innings and is ultimately pulled from the game from his manager Don Mattingly after 100 pitches. My one word take on this? Good! Great! Fantastic! I totally believe in this. Look, No-hitters are special. They're wonderful, obviously, giving the pitcher a chance to achieve it, giving fans a chance to see it. That's all fine. But the Marlins are committed to their welfare, their team, and to their pitcher. They're trying to win over the long haul. It goes for any pitcher. I don't object to this whatsoever. You're trying to do the best that you can to preserve the health of the player, to make sure that he's going to be good for another day. And it's entirely possible that he could go into the ninth inning, throw 37 more pitches, and not get the no-hitter. And then what have you done? You've created a tough situation. We could cherry-pick this a little bit. Obviously, we remember Johan Santana's famous no-hitter. He never seemed to be right again for the rest of his career after racking up a zillion pitches that game. And those kinds of things can happen. Monitoring pitchers and making the best decision, which is usually to bring in a fresh guy from the bullpen, is the best way to go here. I'm sorry to be a party pooper, but that's how I feel about it. All right, our second topic for One More Take this week is umpires. They may be able to soon use microphones to explain replay rulings to the crowd. My one word take on this? Helpful. Sure, why not? Makes a lot of sense. You want umpires to try to convey the message of what's going on. It seems like everything is kind of going on a little bit behind the scenes. Sometimes they can make a ruling and we're not entirely clear what happened. A little bit of verbiage can help, and you know that can inevitably lead to comedy. It seems like when NFL referees do it, they'll come up with some sort of exaggerated explanation for the situation. Yeah, I'm all for it. Umpires more involved, that's fine. Getting the call right is fine. Helpful, that's what I would say. And finally, our last one-word take is we've got Keon Broxton. Take a look at the Milwaukee Brewers outfielder and what he's been doing. Keon Broxton is off to a really rough start so far this season. He's batting well below 200. He's really struggling in every facet. So what does Broxton decide to do? A bat charger. He's going to charge his bats as well as the bats of some of his teammates, as you can see here. I mean, this is fantastic. My one-word take on this, electric. It's electric. I know that bats can't literally be charged, but wouldn't it be great if they could? I appreciate Broxton's sense of humor. A little bit of self-deprecation there as well. Milwaukee Brewers, by the way, leading the major leagues in home runs. Eric Thames has been out of his mind. They're doing a lot of good things. Maybe Keon Broxton will get it going a little bit with his personal bat charger as well. All right. When we return on the Jonah Carey Show, we will have our stock watch for the week. We'll look at which teams are up and down in the world of baseball. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Jonah Carey Show, friends. We are going to look at our weekly segment all baseball season long, and that is Stockwatch. Let's get going here on Stockwatch. We will talk first about the teams that are up in the world of baseball, and normally what we'll do is we'll have three teams up and three teams down. Ah, but there is one team that we really want to spotlight this week, so we're going to really get into it. One team we're going to talk about on Stockwatch on the way up, and that is the New York Yankees. Let's take a look at what the New York Yankees are doing, and we will start with one player in particular, and that is Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge, and this is going to be a rough estimate, but he's about 7'20", 800 pounds, roughly speaking. That's how big Aaron Judge is, a huge behemoth of a man, and of course, he's always had great power potential with that great size and strength. The issue with Judge has been cannot identify balls from strikes. Last year, he had a cup of coffee in the major leagues, struck out about 44% of the time. That is not going to get it done. Even if you do hit the ball a long way when you make contact, that's still not going to do well. But so far this season, he has been magnificent. He's got 5 home runs in his last 9 games, so he's still hitting the ball a mile. But what's making his hitting more effective is his ability to start to control the strike zone a little bit better. Strikeout rate now is about 28%. Walk rate is way up. So you've got a situation where he is a little bit of a three true outcomes guy. Walks, strikeouts, and home runs. But it's fewer strikeouts and more walks. And really, when we talk walks and plate discipline and all this stuff, we're not saying, hey, this is the end goal. What we're saying is, do yourself a favor. If you can identify balls from strikes, it puts you in hitter's counts. If you have a 2-0 count and you're someone as big as strong as Judge and you lay a bat on the ball, it's got a chance to go out of the ballpark. That is the purpose of it. It's been great to see. He is one of the leaders of the Baby Bombers crew, and he's been a big key for the Yankees' great start. Our second key for the New York Yankees so far this season is Michael Pineda. Now, Michael Pineda has been an interesting pitcher through the course of his career. He's 28 years old as a right-hander. Couple teams he's played for, Seattle and now the Yankees. He's been a guy who you look at his strikeout to walk rate and you say, well, he should be a great pitcher, but he throws too many hittable pitches. In other words, he's pounding the strike zone, but he's hitting too much of the strike zone. He's getting shellacked when the ball ends up on somebody's bat. What's interesting with Pineda this year is a couple things are going on. Number one, the strikeout to walk rate is even more impressive. 18 in the third innings pitched. How about 23 strikeouts and 1 walk? An absolutely phenomenal ratio, obviously. He's been tremendous in that regard. But the difference maker for Pineda has been what he does with his pitches when guys do make contact, when it's not necessarily a swing and miss situation. If you look at his cutter in particular, which is the pitch that he throws the most often, slugging percentage against the cutter way down. It's in the 300s this year. It was in the 500s or higher the previous 2 seasons. If you've got a situation where you're striking a lot of guys out, you're not walking too many guys, and when contact is made, you're locating well, and obviously not a lot of hard contact, it leads to great things. Pineda, 28, he's not a baby bomber per se, but if his breakout is going to come this season, would be a big key for New York. And finally, our last guy to look at with the Yankees is Chase Headley. Now, Chase Headley does not at all qualify as a young guy. He's somebody who's entering his mid-30s at this point in his career. He's been around for a while with San Diego, now the Yankees. Disappointing season for much of last year, but some interesting stuff going on this season with Headley. Now, what is he doing that's different? Well, teams are shifting against him all the time. So he's saying, okay, I'll drive the ball and I'll try to pull it when I get a chance, but I'm also going to try to go the other way, beat the shift if I can. We've seen a big spike in how often he hits the ball to the opposite field. I guess he's a switch hitter, so we're doing it both ways. He does that more often this season than ever before during the course of his major league career. It's led to great things. He's laying off pitches that he can hit, and he's driving the ball all over the ballpark, and it's been a really big boon for Headley, who's just been outstanding. He's hitting almost 400. He's got a sky-high on base percentage. Slugging has been magnificent. It's not necessarily going to keep up at this pace, but if he can parlay that new approach all season long, it could create some interesting tidings for a guy who, again, has been around for quite a while. All right, unfortunately, the news is not all good in the world of Major League Baseball. We got to go to teams on the downside as well. And we're going to start with the Yankees' AL East mates, and that's the Toronto Blue Jays. Oh, boy. The Toronto Blue Jays are not necessarily in good shape, to say the least. They are 3-12 this season. They have lost 8 of their last 10 games. It's been a rough, rough start for the Blue Jays. And it's not just that they're losing games. Injuries galore here. Josh Donaldson's on the disabled list. He could miss up to a month with an injury. We've got Aaron Sanchez, who was their staff ace last year. He's got a blister problem. He's on the disabled list. Jay Happ, at least they got good news that he probably doesn't need Tommy John surgery, but he's fighting an elbow injury. He's sitting on the disabled list as well. Throw in relief pitcher JP Howell, a couple other guys. You've got a tough situation where the Blue Jays already are the oldest team in all of baseball, so there's some risk there, as we know, because old teams don't stay good forever. Look at the Phillies of recent vintage, the Yankees of recent vintage. It took rebuilding to really get them back to going back to the upside. Well, the Blue Jays might be in the process of that now. An older team, obviously. Yeah, they've got these injuries. Ooh, there's some concerns there in Toronto. It might have to be a situation where they might have to start a rebuild early if this continues. Second team to look at on the downside is the Pittsburgh Pirates. They are 6-9 to start the season. They have lost 7 of their last 10 games. They just got swept by the St. Louis Cardinals. Get this. In that 3-game series against the St. Louis Cardinals, they lost those 3 games. Let's see. 2-1, 2-1. And 2-1. Well, that's not enough offense, unfortunately. We've seen good tidings from Jameson Taillon, the young right-hander. Pitching is coming along pretty well, but they have not been getting the hitting. And that is now exacerbated because, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Starling Marte is out for 80 games. This is one of the best all-around players on the Pittsburgh Pirates, a potent hitter, and he is now sitting. He will miss half a season. So where do the Pirates go from here? Well, Austin Meadows, their young outfield prospect, is a possibility. They could try to acquire other players. But ultimately, we might be facing a situation where the Pirates are going to have to take a real step back this season, regroup with some of their younger players. Andrew McCutchen might not be a Pirate for much longer. This could be the start of a little bit of a changing of the guard in Pittsburgh. And one more. The Texas Rangers, unfortunately, not off to a good start either. They are 6-10 to start the season. And we referred to Sam Dyson earlier. That's been the big story for them, is that the Rangers have had so much flux in their bullpen and so many difficulties. Dyson lit up in his first 3 appearances of the season, ultimately put on the disabled list for something, some sort of injury, which is not cleared. Probably not much of an injury. They just need to get him off the roster. But they're dealing with other concerns as well. Adrian Beltre is sitting on the disabled list. Of course, their leader and their great third baseman. They've got no offense from left field, where Jurickson and Profar and Delino DeShields Jr. have really struggled as a combination. They did win a walk-off in extra innings on Thursday, so that was a good sign. But the Rangers need to get their team healthy, figure out left field, and figure out the bullpen. Those are 3 key issues for a team that, of course, is riding a recent playoff streak and projected to be one of the better teams in all of baseball. Okay, time for our next segment. We call it Nerd Alert. So, how do we describe Nerd Alert? Very simple. We dive deep into one particular player, trend, or team within the world of baseball. And this week we are talking Eric Thames. Eric Thames. How do I remember that name? Well, Eric Thames was not necessarily a great player at the start of his career. You go back to 2011 and 2012 when he got into the major leagues, playing for the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays. There was a guy who was a fourth outfielder, didn't necessarily do a lot. He signs in Korea. And in Korea, he explodes, becomes an absolute terror. One season hit 47 home runs, absolutely dominated in Korea. Now, the KBO, the league that Thames played in, considered to be lower level baseball than Japan, which Japan is already considered to be lower than the major major leagues. So Thames, despite these big numbers, signs a modest three-year, $16 million contract. And even then, people are saying, Eric Thames, a three-year contract, what are you doing? This is basically, despite the fact that this is money you would give to a middle reliever, already some skepticism about how well he might do. Well, boy, he has been something else to start his rebirth of his major league career. You look at home runs, he's leading the league. You look at slugging percentage, he's leading the league. And you look at pull percentage, and this is the big one here. You think about what Thames gets. So here's a guy who recognizes his skills. He's not trying to hit the ball on the ground. Respect to Chase Headley, but he's not flipping balls the opposite way. He is trying to get pitches to hit and absolutely demolishing them. We talked about the Aaron Judge mentality. Control the strike zone, you have a chance to drive pitches. That's what we've seen from Thames. He's pulling the ball more than 60% of the time when he makes contact. Again, that's his second highest mark in all of baseball. So here's a guy who recognizes his skills. Big, strong slugger, doing what he does best, getting pitches to hit, driving them a mile. Can it continue all year long? Well, he's probably not going to hit like Babe Ruth and Ted Williams all year long. That seems kind of unlikely. But Thames has shown that he can control his strike zone. He does have that natural power. If he can stay healthy and in the lineup every day, he's got a chance to be a difference maker and a gigantic bargain for a Milwaukee Brewers team that frankly could use somebody of that ilk on a team that is lacking talent at the moment. All right, let's move ahead now and we will look at this weekend in baseball, see what's going on. And let's jump to the AL Central here. The AL Central, one of the most competitive divisions in all of baseball. Five teams separated by fractions, eyelashes. It is so close right now in the AL Central from top to bottom. And we've got two matchups of AL Central rivals. One is the Detroit Tigers taking on the Minnesota Twins. Should be some compelling matchups there. Twins have held their own, certainly, to start the season. Tigers have some talent. Some of it is getting older, but they've hung in there as well. And the other interesting one to watch is the Cleveland Indians against the Chicago White Sox. Now, the White Sox expected to rebuild this year and to not be a very potent team, but they've gotten some surprise contributions so far this season from some unlikely sources. They've been able to hold their own. And they still have Jose Quintana, who quietly has been one of the most underrated and best pitchers in all of baseball. And on Friday night, he will oppose Corey Kluber in one of the better pitching matchups of this young season. You've got two staff aces, a right-hander who throws just a devastating stuff when you've got the cutter-slider combination, and Quintana, who likes to mix and match. Good changeup, does a lot of good things from the left side. So, Quintana versus Kluber, White Sox versus Indians. Keep an eye on that, keeping an eye on the Twins versus Tigers, and that AL Central race, which could end up being quietly one of the most compelling ones in all of baseball this season. One last thing we will leave you with, friends, on this week's show. What a great story this is. So here we go. It's a 9-year-old kid, and he's in Indiana. Big Chicago Cubs fan, and he's doing his chores, he's doing well in school, it's all appreciated. And what is his reward for all of these good things that he does around the house? Well, let's take a look at this clip, which will explain to you exactly what our young lad had to get.
Did you want to do it? Be careful and open that up.
So cool, right? Isn't that a great story? Sorry for fumbling it a little bit earlier, but man, such a great story. I'm almost overwhelmed with the emotion of it. It's so cool. You just think back to a young boy appreciating baseball. That could have been me going to Olympic Stadium to see an Expos game back in the 80s. Absolutely. And here's the thing. This caught fire to some extent. You look at the Chicago Cubs. Here's some tweets from John Lester, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryan, all these guys weighing in and saying what a cool story it was. And John Lester caps it. So this kid gets tickets to the game. Very nice. John Lester says, "That's good. We could do better. Why don't you use my seats from the game? Here's a 2-pack. You go with your dad and go enjoy yourself." Now that is tremendous. It's going to be June 3rd. Cubs Cardinals will be sitting in some of the best seats in the house. A nice reward for, you know, a fine young man. That is an impressive story. Very cool stuff. A young Cubs fan. Gotta love it. All right, that'll do it for this week on The Jonah Carey Show. Tune in next Friday and every Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports app, all OTT devices. So glad you could join us this week. We'll see you next week, friends.